Hello, and welcome to part two of the Divine Cosmos audio blog, in which I, David Wilcock, introduce Larry Sire, who's a musical colleague and also a friend of mine, who happens to be a scholar of the Course in Miracles. In case you missed part one, Larry is a nine-time Grammy-winning musician and recording engineer, and we've already collaborated on a project which has become a great success on my website called The Science of Peace. We're now working on a second project called Wanderer Awakening, in which we're doing an album of music songs which is interwoven with a narrative story about the idea of an extraterrestrial soul or an angelic soul who volunteers to be human and to incarnate in this world among people who do not natively have the same sort of memories and the same sort of spiritual orientation that they do. We found that most of the people who are interested by the Divine Cosmos website and this kind of material resonate very deeply with this story of the Wanderer, this idea of being a soul that has been there and done that and had to be human in order to take on a message of service and a message of healing for this planet by their own free will. So that's what many of us are doing. You'll also hear me describe the Law of One series in this talk. And if you'd missed the first part, the Law of One information came through between 1981 to 1984, and in my opinion, it represents the most advanced, intuitively derived information that's ever come through. It describes a variety of different extraterrestrial civilizations who are interacting with our planet. It describes that there is a moment of quantum change coming in 2012, long before any other discussions about the Mayan calendar were in vogue, or before there was any other discussion of these type of things happening at any other time besides the year 2000. So this is my philosophical backbone, and I am always looking for ways to understand it more and how to apply more and more scientific insights to what we've learned from it. I would say the most advanced aspect of the Law of One series is when they get into the description of what happens as you move towards oneness, which is the conclusion of your curriculum of evolution in the universe. Moving towards oneness is a process of awakening to your true identity, which is actually the one creator. And so the title of this series is There's Only One of Us Here, because that's a catchphrase that Larry derived from The Course in Miracles. So what you're going to hear in this second half of the conversation is a rather in-depth discussion between Larry and myself regarding the concept of foreverness and the idea of oneness, the idea that there is actually no time, no space, and in fact, the whole universe never really existed except as an illusion created within the mind of God. I hope you enjoy it, and here we go. Wanderers, as we would use that term, are people who've had that happen more recently, like they've just recently gone from this higher plane. What does the Course say about that? Are we all just walking around, just living our lives, and only a few people are blessed with synchronicity and special things? Like, everybody writes me and they say, oh, David, I wish I had things happening to me like you. Or they say, these strange things are happening to me, I don't understand them, I don't know what to do with it. So what does the Course say about a human being? I mean, who are we? What are we?
Well, the Course says anything not of God is metaphor, and it does not exist. It's all illusion. And that since there's only one of us here, that anything that we perceive as outside of ourselves must be illusion and cannot be real. There is no separation. There is no time. Everything has happened now. One of the things the Course says is the world was over long ago. And when I read that, The world was over long ago. It's one of the things the Course says. And I thought, what in the world does that mean?
That's pretty esoteric.
Pretty esoteric. But as I meditated about this and I thought about it more, I was given an answer, and I'll try to explain it easy as possible. If you could imagine all of time existing in a basketball, okay? Let's imagine that at the center of that basketball is the Big Bang and the beginning of time.
Okay.
Now, on the edge of the basketball where you put your hands, let's say that's the end of time. We'll call that the end of time. Now, if you draw a line from the center of that basketball to any point on the edge of that basketball, let's call that one dimension. That's a timeline.
Okay.
All right. So there's an infinite number of timelines inside this basketball because there's an infinite number of possibilities.
So a timeline is a way in which things could unfold in a future.
Correct. And let's imagine, let's say for right now, David and I are somewhere on a line in between the center of the basketball and the edge of the basketball. Let's say we're somewhere in the middle there. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about this. When you look at that basketball, that all time exists, the center is the beginning, the edge is the end. Know that you are not in that ball. You exist outside the time. We all exist outside of time. We are simply remembering something that happened a long time ago. And when we think we make decisions about going left, right, this, that, whatever, taking this road, that road, what we are really doing, at least this is what was given to me, the course does not say that this is what was given to me and what I interpret, is that we are traversing different dimensions and different timelines. In some timelines, I would have made a decision that would have resulted in my premature death.
Mm-hmm.
In another timeline, my father would have made another decision and I would never have been born. In another timeline, I have remembered everything. And I am fully awakened at the end of the journey. So it's a helpful way to think of time in that all time can exist in a ball. And I don't exist in the ball. I only remember points within that ball.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really helpful analogy. And in fact, I have actually spoken to more than one insider Black Ops witness who's had access to programs involving the manipulation of time and traveling through time, or in many cases, viewing it without actually traveling through it. And these timelines that you describe are basically how they see things. Now, it's never been blown out into the idea of a sphere. I really like that concept. Buckminster Fuller definition of a sphere as an infinite series of points equidistant from a common center.
Right.
And when you start meditating on that, you realize that it's an infinite number of lines from a center
point. Exactly. An infinite number of dimensions.
Right.
Timelines.
And in fact, we do run different timelines and we do skip from one to another according to these inside witnesses. And that's all real stuff. There is disorientation that happens as you jump from one timeline to another. But I do think that what makes the universe so great is the fact that this whole game is being set up. And so that ball is sitting there, but in the process of all of that being created, a lot of really wonderful new stuff was made that wouldn't have been made if the ball had never been built. And I think that's an important clarification. You might want to say something about that. In other words, before this ball, well, okay, we're dealing with time again, right? We're trying to say before.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about time without saying before and after.
But it's sort of like, to put it in terms of the law of one uses, and this is where we're trying to find commonalities between the two sources. This is something Larry and I talk about all the time in private. In law of one terms, we have this one infinite creator where there was this harmonious, intelligent infinity, and there was no chaos, and there was no pain, and everything was just beautiful, but nothing was changing. There was no existence. There was no tangible substance. There was no ball. There was no linear time.
Infinite, perfect oneness forever.
Right. But then the simple fact that the ball was created has actually forever changed the universe in a marvelous, marvelous way. From what I've heard, you can look through various timelines. I've heard this from insider witnesses as well as from the Law of One series, that time is like a river. The river points in whatever direction you're facing. And this is all still within the time illusion, which is an illusion that we have to deal with as a reality. In other words, the Law of One says, on one level, there is no time. And on another level, you are within a structured illusion in which time takes place with duration. Mm-hmm. And that also is real on one level, that within the illusion, time exists.
Mm-hmm.
So the paradox is that, in fact, the universe, as it says in the Law of One, the universe is in a state of becoming. You could almost imagine as if there's like a sphere of energy coming from the center of the ball, expanding out towards the edge. And that sphere within a sphere is expanding. And the point that we're at in our timeline, which you defined
and I think very correctly in terms of the age of the universe, is about halfway through the ball. Mm-hmm. That's about where the sphere has gotten to now. Mm-hmm. And so within the illusion that's created of linear time, half the ball is filled up with this sphere. And everything from that tinier sphere that's half the size on inward is an event that has now been crystallized by the fact that it actually was moved through in a real tangible sense. But where the event horizon of that expanding sphere inside the ball has not hit yet represents the areas that are still with all these different probabilities of how things can go. And I'm just trying to explain it in terms of what I've seen with the physics, with black ops testimony, and with what's in the law of one material. And this is why 2012 is so important. There is no absolute fixed destiny. Free will is what the universe is predicated upon. So when people start talking about this time stuff, you have to still factor in, because we're in an illusion, a highly structured illusion, the illusion has rules. And the most important rule, according to the law of one, is what they call the first distortion, which is free will. And that means that every single person, every single entity within this oneness is a fully functioning co-creator. Meaning, when the universe was created, the greatest gift we were given is to be able to have our own free will to do whatever we want and make our own mistakes. And I'm just interested in what's the Course say about this kind of stuff.
Well, the Course says that this is all an illusion, including time, and that our belief in time does not make it real. In other words, truth is, whether or not we know about it or believe in it or even condemn it, truth is. And it says that we are still one. We always have been and always will be and are currently one with our Creator, having a dream of being separate from our Creator. It's not real, but we believe it's real. We believe this existence right now is so real that we will do backflips just to make it real. We want things to be real because we made it. But what we really are doing is recreating that one, the Course says, tiny mad idea of believing that somehow we could be separate from the infinite one Creator, which is impossible. By definition, God is everywhere, right? God is everywhere. So if we see anything where God is not, it cannot be real. Plain and simple. If we see something where we think that is not perfect, then that can't be real either, because by definition, God is perfect. If God is real, if God is perfect, if we see something that is not perfect, it cannot be real. It must be illusion.
So somebody doesn't tie their shoe and he trips over and he busts his head, and he has a black and blue mark. Oh, I made a mistake. So what is a mistake then from what you're
saying?
You've
got a couple different dreams going on there and a couple different illusions. First of all, there is no shoe and there is no shoelace.
It's like a Zen conversation.
But that's what the Course basically says, that even though we believe it's real, we are collapsing this energy in front of us on the spot by our belief system that everything is infinitely possible, but it only happens when we believe it happens. The Course even says that in no single instant does the world exist at all. Now, that is a mind blower. But if you think about it, okay, if everything is just pure potential and pure God, and it only coalesces and becomes physical matter according to our dream, think about that. All of a sudden, oh my gosh, anything I think can be in my dream. It doesn't change truth. It doesn't change God. It changes nothing except for our illusion and our experience within the illusion.
So you have a guy who's trying to feed three kids, and his wife left him with the kids because she's off getting drunk, let's say, right? And we're trying to go in both directions here and bring them together. And he's going to say, F you, Larry.
Yes, he is.
Because I got to pay my bills.
Yeah.
And you can't fart something out of your ass that's going to make this bill go away. And tell me that because these bills don't exist, that I'm going to put food in my kid's mouth.
Now, what I'm not saying is that the bills and the paper do not exist in your dream, in your illusion. Remember, this is all illusion. We are living within the veil of forgetfulness right now. We believe that everything we see, taste, touch, smell, hold, experience in this physical existence is real. And within the physical experience, it seems real. It's not real, but it seems like it is. So to that person who has bills and or he's tripped over his shoelaces and has a black and blue head from whatever, yeah, that's real to him. That's absolutely real. You can believe anything you want. We are infinite creator. Remember, it was our thought that created the universe.
Mm.
It was the tiny mad idea that we could somehow be separate from God that made the universe.
The Seth readings say within one person is enough energy to recreate the entire universe. And that's obviously still in the finite world where there is one person.
Well, there's only one person. There's only one of us here. There is no separation. In other words, you, David, are me having a David experience.
That's right.
Every person listening here is having a David experience and a Larry experience and a fill in the blank experience. There's only one of us here. It's only within the illusion and the veil of forgetfulness that it seems as if we are separate entities. We are not. We are the same. We are the one. We are with our Father. We never left home. This is a dream. This is an illusion. This is what the Course teaches.
So why, I mean, I have an answer, of course, that I've expressed many times, but within this Course philosophy, why are all these changes happening on the planet that are upsetting to so many people? What's the whole point here?
I don't have an answer to that, except that the solution for it, as the Course explains, is through forgiveness.
Forgiveness.
Everything.
Why the focus on that particular concept?
Because
we're dealing with global problems. We're dealing with like people trying to blow up their countries and, you know.
But you have to remember that those people blowing up those countries are you. They
right.
are me. They are. There's only one of us here, remember?
Right.
And that there is the no Illuminati separation only within the veil of forgetfulness. Okay, so what needs to happen and what must happen is forgiveness must occur because all of the judgments that we have made upon our seemingly separated selves has reinforced our idea and belief in the fact that they are somehow separate from us and that we are different. We're not different. We are the same. We are one. So forgiveness is absolutely essential. And then that forgiveness paradigm and forgiveness exercise is permeated through everything you experience in your life. The people you see, the things you see, the experience you have, and then ultimately back to the beginning of time, you forgive yourself for believing you could somehow be separated from God.
Well, what if you, I'm just going to play devil's advocate for the sake of having fun
sure.
and making, you know, conflict is what yeah. inspires discussion.
Yeah. I forgive you.
You forgive me already. See, that's good. If you just keep forgiving somebody who's abusing you, then what's the point? I mean, you're just going to keep getting abused because, oh, no, it's okay. I think a lot of people have that problem when they're wanderers, especially.
I'm not saying make stupid. I mean, if you really don't want to be in that situation, you get the heck out of there. But I think you know this, and you've even said this because we talked about this before. Every situation in our life for every seemingly separated individual is a choice made on some level.
I agree.
Every one of them. No exception.
And I think another really important philosophical truism here is if you practice true forgiveness, then that also means implicit within forgiveness is acceptance. I mean, this is a law of one
thing.
It's
the same thing.
Right?
You know, that's Course says too. Okay. Forgiveness and acceptance are the same thing.
Okay, so we take that as our philosophical premise to build a foundation off of. Then we say, if there's only one self, in the law of one material, it's explained that the only direct conduit you're ever going to have to the creator is within. You can offer someone else stimulus to find it within themselves, but you can't give it to them. You can show them something that they may be able to use. But the only way that you're ever going to truly get there is within yourself.
That's absolutely true. And the Course says something similar to that. It's a little bit different. It actually says there's nobody else out there. You're not here. There's only one of us here. And when I say me, I don't mean the little me of Larry, because he's nothing. Larry doesn't really exist. Larry is an idea.
Right.
Just an idea. The only thing real is God, period. No exceptions. And the only path back to God is within, because there's nothing outside of God. There is no way we could be but within God.
Right. So because you're in a hall of mirrors, and ultimately there is only this one self, and you're experiencing that self firsthand. It's your body. You're given this instrument through which you experience oneness in this apparent illusion. The only thing that you're ever absolutely certain of is your own existence.
No, not for me. The only thing I'm positively certain of is that I don't know anything.
Okay.
That's all I know.
That's perfectly valid. Back in the days when I took LSD, which was a few years in the beginning of college around that time, I had these bad trips where I felt like I was the only person who existed. And it was like...
It was lonely.
I realized that everybody else around me, it wasn't that they didn't exist, but it was like awareness had only given them a small piece, and yet they thought they existed, but compared to what awareness with a capital A was, it was as if they were like broken pieces of glass of this mirror that shows you yourself when right. you're able to see yourself.
Right. That's interesting that you would use the mirror analogy, because I think of infinite creator, God, whatever you want to call this thing, this one that we are all part of, as the perfect mirror.
Mm.
And as we project, make judgments upon other things and other people, that's a form of projection, then the perfect mirror shows it right back to us. So one of the things the Course teaches is that when I see an atrocity happen, that atrocity is actually in my mind. I wouldn't be able to see it if it was not in my mind. So I forgive myself for that atrocity. It's all within me. Forgiveness happens within me with my creator.
I guess what I was trying to get to, getting back, that's a very good point. Getting back to the forgiveness thing in terms of abusers, and if you're forgiving an abuser, and then you just let the abuse keep happening, that's not a full understanding of the philosophy of forgiveness. What I was trying to get to was implicit in forgiveness is acceptance.
Yes.
Therefore, the most important person that you can actually forgive and accept is going to be yourself.
Absolutely.
Because that's the only conduit that you have that's a direct conduit to the creator.
100% agree.
This gets back to Cartesian philosophy and all these crazy things like existentialism that you study in college, and I don't know why they make you do that, but these guys that would basically talk about the fact that nothing existed,
yeah,
and then they'd go off and have prostitutes and cigars. You know.
Well, it's all a dream, David. Why not have a little fun while we're here? I'm not condoning prostitution, by the way.
The point being that we exist in a reality that we can turn our backs on. What these existentialist philosophers tried to say is basically the only thing I can prove, I meaning the philosopher, the only thing I can prove is that I exist. And even that I can't prove. All I can prove is that there is something aware. I think, therefore, I am. That's Descartes, right? I think, therefore, I am. Something is happening here in me. That's the only thing I absolutely know is happening.
I'd
Everything
say
else outside could potentially be, philosophically, could potentially be all an illusion.
I'd say that above the I think, therefore, I am, there's actually something above that, and that is I am.
Yeah.
Because in order to think, you must have perception. In order to perceive something, you must be separated from something else. The only way you can have perception is to have two-ness. If there is oneness, there is no perception. You are that.
Mm.
So, I am.
Well, this is a very interesting point. In the Law of One material, they explain that the sixth density level, this is the level that Ra comes from, this is the level that we all have a higher self at, and there's only eight, there's an octave, and these are major colors, they're like the true colors, like the colors of the rainbow, and they're also frequencies like the white keys in the piano.
Wow.
Would be another way.
Hmm.
We're third density right now, which is just choosing between love and control. Fourth density is love. Fifth density is wisdom. Sixth density is love and wisdom unified, in which self and other are seen as one.
Yes.
But seventh density is what they call timelessness or foreverness, in which you see that there is no self or other.
Correct.
There is only awareness.
Correct. That's interesting, the law one says. That's exactly in line with the Course.
Yeah.
Because self is an illusion too.
Right.
The seemingly separated selves, they cannot be real. There's no separation. There's only one.
Right.
There's only one. I think it's interesting, the law of one.
Right.
And oneness. And now the Course talks about how much oneness. There's only God. That's the only person here. That's just God. Everything else is metaphor.
But what's so fascinating in the Law of One series is that the first thing they said was actually deleted by the group because they were afraid of what it sounded like on paper. Ra says, I am Ra. We are not those of the love. We are not those of the light. We are those of the Law of One. And so it freaked out the group because they're saying, what do you mean they're not of the love? Well, what they were saying is, we're not those of the love, meaning we're not fourth density. We're not those of the light, meaning we're not fifth density. We are those of the Law of One. The Law of One is sixth density. That's not the end.
Right.
And everybody gets hung up on it like, that's all there is one. Well, the Law of One is one thing, which is self and other are one. But then above that, actually, even though the Law of One is ultimately the highest truth, and they explain this, they also say, in another sense, if you define the Law of One as self and other are one, then it's only a sixth density Law of One. If you use the term Law of Foreverness, then you're dealing with the fact that there is only awareness. And that's seventh density, which is the last thing that you learn before you are fully reunified with the Creator. We're getting, as I said, it's somewhere around 120, 150 emails a day coming in of people high-fiving us, telling us, we love your work, we think this is the most enlightening stuff out there right now. And we thank you for all that. And what I want to point out here is that it is true that what appears to be happening is the Earth is shifting third density into fourth density, and that a large number of people will have an opportunity to experience living on Earth in a so-called utopian world, which, according to Law of One definition, is 100 times more harmonious than what life is like on the Earth now. That being said, that's still only fourth density. You still got 5D, 6D, and 7D. The much greater value than just preparing people for fourth density ascension is preparing people and educating people to timelessness, foreverness, and oneness, which is seventh density and even octave level understandings. And there is a philosophical statement, a single sentence that was given in the Law of One, a single snippet of a sentence, as to how best to embody in your daily life seventh density awareness. And that is the sacramental nature of all things. And you confused that before with sacrificial.
Yeah, right. When you said sacramental, I was thinking, what kind of sacrifice? What are you talking about here? Then I realized that you're talking about sacrament, like the holy sacrament.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you really want to take all these things that we're talking about, which seem really far out and esoteric, and start bringing them back to the level of your own life, if you're at least willing to accept the philosophical foundation that we've built, that it might be true. It might be true that there's only one of us here. It might be true that the whole universe is ultimately an illusion. It might be true that all we're seeing is mirrors of ourselves, and so all the disharmony on the planet is a projection. The Law of One gets into a lot more detail because what they're talking about is the administration of the illusion, that these guys represent a group who is responsible for, as they call it, the management and transfer of planetary populations.
That is pretty interesting right there.
Because, first of all, the management of planetary populations. What do you mean by the management of a planetary population?
I don't know.
And then the transfer
what does
of
that
planetary
mean?
Populations, right?
I don't know.
Well, they did define what it means. They said Mars was a planet that was civilized like the Earth, that had water and oceans and people like us, and there's more and more evidence coming out all the time from NASA, but they keep doing it in little dribs and drabs. They never come out with it all at once. But there's little bitty drops of disclosure, and I'm using that term for a reason, because it's always about liquid water.
Right. Because they know that if they admit that there's water there, there must be life there.
Of course, because comets are loaded with DNA,
right,
loaded with bacteria. How hard would it be for a comet to seed life on another planet when we know that there's 1.2 billion comets in the solar system, and when we've analyzed the dust coming off these comets, they're loaded with bacteria?
Well, this gets back to the idea of the ego and wanting everybody to be special, the specialness concept that's somehow better than the other. Now, as long as we can keep Earth, the concept that Earth is special and there's no other place where life can exist, then it's much easier to believe in the myth that this is a very unique existence and we are special. But if we come up with the idea that, oh my gosh, life is teeming throughout the entire universe, all of a sudden we're no longer special. We're this little speck on a little suburb of the Milky Way galaxy that's a tiny galaxy within billions of galaxies. That would not play very well into the specialness card.
No, it wouldn't. And what it also would do is it would take away these religious concepts that we are God's chosen people. Because people automatically want to think that in the Darwinian model, that some incredible miracle happened on this planet that has never happened anywhere else in the whole universe, that there was this little
specialness again.
Primordial soup.
It's a specialness thing. This special thing happened to one special individual, and it was just that one special time, and it's never going to happen again. And
it's kind of like how everybody wants to be famous, right? Or everybody wants to win the lottery and have a huge amount of money.
Okay, the thing that I think about when I think about that is that if God is everywhere, how could he possibly have an opposite? Okay, think about that. If God is everywhere, how could he possibly have an opposite? It's not possible.
That's true. So then what is the opposition that we seem to be seeing around ourselves?
It's the ego, which is another made-up dream that we did in order to perpetuate the idea that we could somehow be somewhere where God is not. And that's what we're living in, this made-up illusion, this world. There's always two voices in our head, always two. And there's always only two choices. It's either the voice of the Holy Spirit, which is the call for reunification, or the voice of the ego, which is always the madness, the what's in it for me.
Well, what's wrong with that? I mean, on some level, everybody's asking that question because desire is the fount of motivation.
But the path to oneness is through the knowledge that I am everything. So therefore, the demonstration of giving of myself to my brother is the demonstration that there is no separation between me and my brother. My brother and I are one.
Right. So if you're basically trying to consume everything,
then you're perpetuating the idea that you're separate.
Right.
Right. And that
and you're living you
believe
in a lie.
You're listening to the ego. You're believing the illusion. There's nothing wrong with it, by the way. Let me clarify that there's no judgment to me made by this because nothing is happening. This is absolutely of no consequence.
Right.
That nothing is happening. It's just a dream. But what you're really doing is perpetuating your belief in hell. You're keeping yourself in this idea of separation, this dream of loneliness and despair.
So how do you define hell then?
Hell is what we're living in right now. No question about it. I mean, how else would you define it? Okay, we got a world here where people are fighting each other for this black stuff or this controller or these illusions. These
little pieces of paper.
The whole world is an illusion. The whole dang world is an illusion. People are fighting for this illusion and that illusion and this and that. All the while, they've completely forgotten the fact that they are all one. It's not real. They've completely forgotten it. This is where we need to wake up.
Well, I believe this gets into the meditation on honor and responsibility. Honor is a higher spiritual principle in the Law of One system than just regular unconditional love. Unconditional love sounds really good on paper, but unconditional love oftentimes implies that you're out there basically just doing whatever the heck you want. Honor is a principle where you're starting to see that there are some conditions to love because in the illusion, you have choices to make. And some of those choices will be what is best not for your ego, but for who you really are as a oneness. And if you make those kinds of choices, the finite mind, the finite body, may not appreciate as much what you're doing. So that guy that has to feed his three kids, we don't recommend that he go and give his kids to the orphanage.
Absolutely not. No.
Because...
Let's be clear. Hey, okay, we're living this dream and we believe it's real, so you better play the game. Because you step out there in front of a car, I guarantee you you're going to die. So don't do that. Oh, your body's going to die. You won't
Your
die.
Body would die,
Your
yes.
body would die. But getting back to what you said, there's always choices.
Money. Yeah.
You said
people have to earn money and they have to, there's things that you have to do.
True.
Responsibilities.
The concept of choice, though, is also an illusion, because in order to have choice, you must have something separated from another device to choose between. There is no separation. It's all oneness. It's all dream, all metaphor, even the concept of separation, the concept of a choice. There is no choice. It's inevitable that we return to our Father.
You're saying that there is no choice because... To imply that there's opposites to look at.
There's a choice within the illusion. That's what I mean to say. Yes, there are definitely choices within the illusion.
Right.
But ultimately, those choices only do one thing. You either collapse time or you extend time.
So that opening Course in Miracles statement said something like that, right? About choosing the curriculum?
You cannot choose the curriculum. You can only... let me get it here so I can read it. Free will does not mean that you can establish the curriculum. It only means that you can elect what you want to take at a given time. So, you know, we can perpetuate our hell forever if we want to, or we can forgive and remember that the dream was over the instant it was made, and that we're safe at home in God. Nothing happened. This is an illusion. It's a bad dream.
And we're waking up little by little.
That's right.
So... the Course in Miracle principles seem to really embody what Law of One scholarship would call seventh density teaching.
Mm-hmm.
They don't so much focus on politics of management and transfer of planetary population.
Never.
Or 2012 or ascension or any of this stuff.
I find that interesting. I can't wait to read the Law of One to find out more information about that.
Yeah,
but no, the Course does not say anything about that at all.
Right. But
it's
what
all
they
about
are,
forgiveness.
What they are doing is really going to the heart of seventh density teaching. And the Law of One series explained that if we can move through a seventh density curriculum while we're here on Earth, that something amazing is happening. If we can grasp the nature that everything is sacramental, that everything is exactly God's perfection.
Yes.
Then we no longer are subject to what's called random catalyst. Now, Law of One series defines catalyst as the experiences that come along to stimulate growth. So within the illusion, you have to look at it like a folding accordion, like that baffle on the accordion that expands and contracts in size, okay? We know that nothing ever really happened, that it's all in a single moment of awareness that's experiencing what appears to be an illusion of finite time. But within the illusion, it's very plastic. It's elastic. It can stretch like a rubber band. So... if you can imagine now that you have this folded accordion and then each little rib on the accordion fold is like a particular understanding in that course that you were talking about in the Course in Miracles. Because you said something in that opening statement. What was it again? You can choose the...
free will does not mean that you can establish the curriculum. It means only that you can elect what you want to take at a given time.
Okay, right. So what you want to take at a given time... each of those things would represent like one of the points on one of the ribs of the accordion. What Ra is trying to do in the Law of One material is say, you can compress the length of the accordion in terms of how you're hopscotching from one of these things to another, and the length represents linear time. So your higher self is like you in the future, traveling back in time. That's what we all have, is this part of ourselves in sixth density, is traveling back in time like in your dream, and saying, hey, there's a certain set number of things that you need to go through to get to where I am. You have to do all of them. But let's work on speeding up the interval with which you go through all this stuff to get to where I am.
And David, the course actually addresses that very concept. Okay. It's interesting you're talking about the accordion. It says that the miracle, which is forgiveness, actually collapses time.
Hmm.
It says that specifically. It collapses time. A miracle is an out-of-time sequence. Gosh. And when they're talking about miracle, they're not talking about making a box disappear or or going from one place. No, this is not magic tricks. A miracle is the act of forgiveness. When you have two people, let's say, that are at odds with each other and they hate each other or whatever.
Right.
When they both awaken or at least open their eyes enough to see that, hey, you are me and I am you, and forgiveness happens, that's a miracle. And the Course says that that actually collapses time.
Well, it's very interesting because in the Law of One material, which obviously I think we're dealing with two sources from what the Law of One would call the Confederation, which is this sort of conglomerate of 53 civilizations that are helping out the Earth and other planets at this time in the so-called management and transfer of planetary populations.
I wonder what kind of car we're going to get driving to New Place. Do they have motorcycles there?
I'd like the levitating Goldwing myself. I think that'd be a really nice ride.
That's pretty cool.
But anyway, this Confederation message is very consistent between the two, because in the Law of One, it says, in forgiveness lies the stoppage of the wheel of karma. And the wheel of karma, if you can imagine that there's a wheel on the wall, and it can spin on the wall, and then there's a little person on the wall, and he's attached to that wheel. And so when the wheel spins downward, he's going to go downward. And when the wheel spins back around and he goes back up to the top, the height actually represents your level of vibration and your level of joy or disaster in your life. And they said, in forgiveness lies the stoppage of the wheel of karma, which means the wheel gets to the top, and then it stops moving.
That's
no longer dragging you down.
That's fantastic. I think it's the same information.
It really does seem to be. It really does seem to be.
Yeah.
So when we start to understand the principle of forgiveness, what is the difference between forgiveness of other and forgiveness of self?
There's no difference. It's all one. Forgiveness is forgiveness. So there is no self.
So when you see something in someone else that pisses you off, what does that really mean?
Something that you see in that other person is in you that needs to be forgiven.
So when somebody's getting angry and says, oh my God, I can't believe da-da-da-da-da is doing da-da-da-da-da, all they're really seeing is what?
Well, first of all, they are not out there. That entire scenario of you seeing that person in that experience is within you, and that is what needs to be forgiven.
Right.
They are not out there. It has nothing to do with them.
But then the forgiveness of that person is forgiveness of yourself, because all you're doing is seeing your issue in that other person.
Correct. You forgive yourself because your issue that you have is an issue with yourself and not with them. They are completely innocent. As a matter of fact, one of the goals of the course is to see the face of Christ on everyone.
Mm.
Now, that implies that we have painted something on the face of Christ. Now, what if we painted on the face of Christ? Our projections of guilt onto that perfect Son of God. So, forgiveness, then, of the self and what we think we see, we forgive ourselves for what we have projected on the perfect Son of God, who is wholly perfect.
Well, this is like that biblical parable where there's somebody in their house who's expecting Jesus to show up at the door.
Right.
And God says to them, I will send you someone in my image, or I will send you my messenger, right?
Right.
And then the hobo shows up and says, hey, you got some money?
You got any food for me? And they say, get out of here. We're waiting for God.
And then that happens like, what, two or three times with different scenarios like that.
Right.
And then God shows up at the end and says the infamous Bible quote, even as you do this to the least of these, you do this unto me.
And that's perfect truth. Of course it is. God is everywhere.
Right. So there's a really fascinating thing in the Law of One, too, that's along the same line. And it blows your mind when you think about it this way. If you even reach one person, then you have reached all. And Ra actually says that if even one person is reached by our efforts, then our efforts are sufficient. And what it also means is that you as a human being, as an apparent human being having this apparent finite experience, that all you ever have to do is reach one person. And ultimately, of course, the most important person to reach is yourself. But that aside, if your job is to reach one other person besides yourself, how do you know who that person is going to be? You can't know.
Well, I hate to keep saying this, but there's nobody out there. And you don't exist, and neither do I. There's nobody to save. There's only forgiveness.
But even as you do this unto the least of these, you do it unto me.
You just forgive yourself. You forgive, you forgive, you forgive, you forgive. And when you think you've forgiven everything, you forgive again. Because ultimately, you're going to get back to the point where the beginning that got us in this mess in the first place, which was this crazy idea that we could somehow be separate from God. The insane idea. So ultimately, we must be in the habit of forgiving so that when we remember the beginning, which is where the end and the beginning are together. Remember that even talking about that in the Bible. Mm. When you get to the point where you remember the beginning and the end, you forgive that idea, that decision that we made, that I made, to be somehow separate from God, which is an impossibility.
So essentially, we're going through these lives where terrible things can happen to us, seemingly terrible things. We have tragedy, we have pain, we have sorrow, and we have responsibility in order to keep the body fed and clothed and, and sheltered.
And that's the rules of the dream.
Most of us are not blessed with some sort of inheritance or whatever that would allow us to just live and watch TV all day and do nothing. Some people have that. And you find out when people win the lottery, what usually happens to them? They're miserable, depressed.
Yeah.
All their friends turn on them and say, hey, man, can you spare $50,000? My kid needs to go to college.
The solution is not money. Well, what happens is that money then becomes their new God.
Yeah.
And so everything that the ego presents to them, that, oh, you can have your own little world, you can have your own little self, they're just repeating the same thing that happened at the very beginning at the Big Bang. You can have your own little world where God doesn't exist. You can have your own little place. You're going to be in control of everything. I'll protect you. I'm going to keep you.
Well, yeah. What happens if this guy, and I've heard stories like this, what happens if this guy who wins the lottery gets knocked on his head and becomes a paraplegic? What good's the money going to do you then? Not to say that there are people out there who have these kind of physical challenges who still might be listening to the show. And if so, then obviously there's a reason why you're having that experience. But the point being that when you put your faith in something of this world, like money, and you think that by aspiring to that or to this goal of like, well, we need to get rid of these Illuminatis in the government because they're causing all the trouble.
It makes
the
illusion real to you.
Yeah.
It makes the illusion real. So the more you have invested in the illusion, the more real it is for you. I've been told that you can actually get to the point where you forgive enough and you remove your investment in the world, retract your investment, and I'm not talking about money, I'm actually talking about your belief in what's real, then you become as a passerby. You simply watch things happen and you no longer are upset. You are completely blissful and happy because you remember the source, which is God, which is your inheritance. And this becomes meaningless, this world I'm talking about, this illusion.
Right.
Completely meaningless. That's why I believe most of the great spiritual ascended beings, I understand there's only at any given time 20 of them on this planet.
Who that may be.
Have achieved this. You'll never hear of them. They're never going to be on the evening news. They're never going to be stars. They're not going to write books. They're not going to have a website. They're going to be completely loners and live. They may live in the forest, they may live on a street corner, they may live in private homes and totally out of the public eye because they have no investment or no need for interaction with the illusion. There's a great book by Eckhart Tolle called The Power of Now.
Yeah, many people probably listening have read that.
If you can get that book and read his story of what happened to him when he was able to rid himself or no longer believe in the ego, he goes through a period of several months where he's just living in parks outside and completely happy, ecstatically happy. Mm. No money, no place to live, no nothing. He's happy. There's another story I want to share here. And while we're telling stories, is one of the things that I like to do as part of my studies with The Course in Miracles is I read a lady's blog named Regina Dawn Akers.
Okay. .com. How do you spell Akers?
A-K-E-R-S, Regina Dawn Akers. And she wrote a book called The Holy Spirit's Interpretation of the New Testament. Hmm. People call it NTI. She was describing this experience one time. We think of experiences within this world as being painful or pleasurable. She described the Holy Spirit actually put her in a situation where she watched her daughter eat an apple. And now her daughter was about to put the apple in her mouth, and the Holy Spirit moved Regina's consciousness into the apple so that she could feel what the apple felt.
Hmm.
As her daughter bit into the apple, she felt complete ecstasy.
Hmm.
It was nothing but pleasure. In other words, during that short period of time when her daughter was eating the apple, Regina was not in her body. She did not have an ego. She was the apple. She said it was the most incredibly blissful experience she's ever experienced. And she no longer saw the apple as this hard physical object. She saw it as a bundle or a ball of love with love that looks similar to teeth going into this other part of love. Everything was love.
Hmm.
So she was able to see everything as love. It's an interesting story that she shared.
It's very interesting. A friend of mine named Laurel Erica, who has a website, wordmagicglobal.com or .net, I forget which, but her thing is called Word Magic. And Erica is spelled A-I-R-I-C-A. Laurel relays an experience where she was very in tune with nature and with plants. She was concerned about walking on grass, because this is how bleeding heart liberal she was, afraid of hurting the grass.
She's afraid you're going to hurt the grass. Well, that's a nice thing to say. It's not real. Grass loves me to walk on it.
Well, that's the punchline. She basically went into a shamanic state, a mystical state, and tried to find out what did the grass actually think about being walked on. And she relayed exactly the same thing.
Well, that's really interesting.
The grass was thrilled that a human being, which is basically like, to the plant, it's like a whole dimensional level higher. It's like an angel. It's like a godlike creator being was honoring it by walking on it and using it for its purpose.
Right.
For what it's been cultivated for, to make things beautiful, to make us have something we can walk on that's comfortable. And it was thrilled.
It's a beautiful story. And I believe it's our projections of things that we see in this world that cause them to be painful to us. Like we'll see an animal who kills another animal. Let's say a wolf who hunts down a deer and kills it. We think, oh, the poor deer. We're projecting our guilt onto the deer and the wolf and then bad wolf and what have you. But in reality, in God's kingdom, that is a perfect event. Now, in reality, neither one of them are there. But it is perfection unfolding. Like you were talking about the law of one,
right,
being able to see the perfection and everything. That is perfection.
And if you have a problem with it, then you haven't practiced the F word.
Forgiveness, that's right. It's another forgiveness opportunity because you have projected something that's not real onto this situation.
One last thing I really wanted to toss in here, and it relates to the idea of in forgiveness lies the stoppage of the wheel of karma, is another principle about catalyst, which I have relayed to so many people over and over again. It never gets old. To me, it's one of the most valuable things that was said in the Law of One. It said, catalyst will continue repeating until it is no longer useful.
Uh-huh.
Then you got to say, okay, man, what do you mean by useful? How do I define useful?
How much pain do I have to go through before I don't have to go through pain anymore?
Right. As we say, as you like to say, the universe is always willing to give you more shit.
That's right. Hey, that's right.
You want some shit?
Hey, did you like this shit? We got some more.
We got plenty more for you if you're ready for it. So If catalyst keeps repeating until it's no longer useful, then you got to figure out what does it mean to be useful. Anything that causes your state of mind to change is useful.
Absolutely.
When you're doing films, screenplays are about a hero character, which could be male or female, having a change of state. That archetype that films are written on, which is why people want to see a movie, unless it's some weird art film that doesn't have a character at all. But most films have a character, a main character, who goes through character change. And the reason why we keep liking to see that, even if the change is bad, even if you have a basically good-natured but ignorant person who has a Luciferian type awakening and they become evil and they start killing people, but maybe they do it for a righteous cause or whatever, but in the end they're basically they become this crazy murderer. We like to see people change. We like to see changes happen. And so Catalyst will keep repeating until it is no longer useful. Meaning, if you find it useful to have to download your music and you're not ready for Pandora, you're not ready for this sort of global DNA database of music to tell you, hey, that you might like this, then you're going to keep on trying to find music that you like and not enabling the ways in which it's going to get to you. So what's happening now is, this is just one of many examples why I'm saying the old system is breaking down, the old media. And Larry, you're a part of that system because you were in the recording industry, you still are, but you've seen that whole business change so radically.
Oh yeah, completely. There used to be a time when to make a record, you had to go to a special place with special equipment with people that knew how to operate that equipment. That would be me. So you musicians and producers would come in there, and then I would be one of the few people that could operate the gear and make the records, and that was called an engineer. And that went away. Once computers came out and software came out, or ADATs, or there's a whole plethora of things that came out that caused the demise of recording studios. But now, I think it's a blessing, because we're sitting in my recording studio. We're doing everything on the computer.
Yeah, yet we're surrounded by all this gear that you used to use.
That's correct.
Which you're getting ready to get rid of.
Well, yeah, I put my coat on that thing over there. I put my hats over there.
Right, he's got it's become furniture.
That's right.
I would have liked it if we'd had it cleaner, but practice the F word.
Yeah. But it's great to have this. So I think it's progress, even though there have been many people uprooted from their jobs and from particular situations where they were very comfortable doing what they were doing. The change is good.
And well, that's what happened to you too, right?
I mean, absolutely.
I had to diversify.
Well, that's one of the
you
reasons.
You said the Grammy Awards were like a business card, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not belittling that. I'm honored to have them.
Right.
I really am. It's a wonderful thing. But honestly, would you have even talked to me had I not told you that?
No. We would have had the session.
Right.
But that's back when people could get a session and you waited like, 5 months or something to get to me.
So I think it's just a tool. For me, the Grammys are a tool. I do believe that you and I are supposed to be doing what we're doing right now. This is supposed to happen. So I think it's great and I'm really happy about it. But this would never have happened had not the industry changed and I had to go through the process I went through to get where we are right now.
Right. If you were still making money doing what you were doing,
why would I even do anything?
You'd be
like
in
this?
The illusion.
Exactly.
And having a great time making probably music that you didn't really like that much in some cases, but you put your heart into it and you do the best you can.
I used to make a ton of money.
And you collect a check.
That's it. It's no longer true, but it used to be.
And now what I'm so excited about is you guys listen to this blog and then you go back and do something else. We're going back to working on this incredible music that for both of us is like something we've always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But then we have to say, because both of us think the same way, it's like, okay, we need money, but what we really can't afford is the time. Time is the thing that's the greatest commodity. When you really start to get through forgiveness of self, acceptance of self, in the Law of One series, there's a third part to the formula. Forgive self, accept self, direct the will to positive service to the universe, to humanity.
That's right.
So the direction of will is what happens after you've done this work on yourself. And obviously, a conversation at the kind of high level we're having is a result of two people who've done a lot of work on themselves. Mm-hmm. And have been through many, many cases of the idiot cycle where we just keep messing up and the universe is slapping us down, slapping us down, slapping us down. And you finally say to yourself, you know what? I don't really like the way shit tastes.
That's right. I've had enough shit. Hey, that's enough of that.
And it's like, you can keep believing in a world of separation and pain. You can keep believing that these terrible earth changes are coming and that terrible economic disasters are coming. And there are going to be changes in society. Nothing stays exactly the same. But the point being that all this stuff that's happening, I keep saying this over and over again, it's just a reflection to show us the level of our consciousness at this time. And as we heal within ourselves, and this means just you yourself healing the situations in your own life with the people in your life through forgiveness and through having healthy boundaries and not letting yourself be taken advantage of, and learning to communicate is very important. You can't just keep this stuff inside yourself. You got to go out there and say what you're feeling. Keep the lines of communication open. When you can start doing this, you're energetically helping the whole planet. And in a very real sense, that's the collapse of the illusion. Because what it reveals is your internal state does affect the external. You are not this powerless person sitting in a world in which tidal waves are going to sweep over you and titanic forces are going to sweep you down under the sea. You're dealing with a reality that is your creation, that you are a part of, and that you're dancing in. And the more that you make that dance, seeing the sacramental nature of everything, seeing that everything is perfect and whole and complete and pure as it is, then your reality changes, because catalyst only repeats if it's useful. If you're not getting any use out of pain, then you won't need any.
Absolutely true. The pain will be there only as long as you need it. And you reminded me of something else. This is from the Course also.
Okay.
A guiltless mind cannot suffer. It's one of the phrases.
A guiltless mind cannot suffer.
Meaning that we experience pain because of guilt.
Mm.
That the physical act of taking a pin and sticking it in my leg is in and of itself not painful. But the guilt that I have, the deserving of the guilt, is what makes me experience the pain of the needle in my leg.
Mm.
That's an interesting thing. It's been said before, and I don't know if you can even prove this to be true, but it's been said that when the Master Jesus was on the cross, when they were nailing the nails in his hands, he screamed ecstasy. He was in ecstasy because he saw nothing but love.
Mm.
He saw nothing but love. It was not a painful experience for him. He could not experience pain because he was completely guiltless, and he remembered who he was.
Mm. One of my favorite Law of One-isms, which I paraphrase, this is not the original quote, but my readings paraphrased it. To a perfectly balanced entity, there is no such thing as an emotionally charged situation. There are only two choices, the choice to be of service or the choice to withdraw from the situation.
That's perfect, because I was going to say there's only two things. There's either a demonstration of love or a call for love.
Yeah.
That's all there is. Demonstration of love or a call for love.
Right.
Now, are you going to give of yourself and prove that the separation never happened? Or are you going to keep your part of the illusion and make the separation real for you? That's the question. So I always say to myself when I see other people, that's me. So I treat that person as if he is me or she is me because they are. That's me.
And because we're in this giant structured illusion, when you start to break through and realize that this is an illusion and that it has rules that are not immediately obvious, which is partially why we have this crazy media, the illusion feeds you back for what you put out. It's the golden rule, but at a much more scientific and sophisticated level, where the golden rule is actually a law of physics, which is very much maintained by these people who manage planetary populations. In other words, when you're managing a planetary population, what you're actually doing is you're making sure that the principles of divine causality are in effect, which means that even on a global level, like these globalists who are tormenting the planet, you can invade people's free will. But in so doing, you're mandating that will come back to you.
Absolutely. In another
life. So I do believe that we are going to see the collapse and the decline and decay of many of these large institutions that have been systematically violating people's free will and destroying the game. I just saw something the other day. You know that guy on TV, Jon Stewart? I mean, who doesn't,
right?
There's now this thing that just came out, an article I saw that said he has become the most influential voice in American politics.
I believe it. And what, didn't we just watch a segment with him just a couple of days ago? Or?
The whole point is that he's lampooning the controlled media.
Right.
That's what every bit is about. It's like they're just documenting how ridiculous this whole thing is of this controlled media with all the spin control and all the lies and all the bullshit.
Right.
So it's like this guy who's basically showing you, hey, this is all just a big game. It's all an illusion. None of this is real. Has become the most influential voice in politics.
Well, there's truth in that.
It is. People are ready for the truth. They don't want to be lied to anymore.
Right.
Well, I think we're just about at two CD lengths. We can probably break this into two pieces for you guys listening. We have a lot of people who are putting this on CD and listening to it in their car. As a closing remark, I want to say, I also have, during the week starting on November 7th, a Mexican Riviera cruise. That's with Kevin Fitzgerald. That information is available on my website. You can call him on the phone, 951-805-1820, 951-805-1820. It's 3 days at sea, during which time I'll be lecturing the whole day. You can ask me questions. It's a small group. It'll probably be somewhere between 50 to 75 people. We have 50 signed up right now. We'll probably get some more before we go. It appears I just got an email today that I'm going to be doing the Los Angeles Conscious Life Expo in February again. That was where I had 5 different events last time, so that's going to happen again. And Larry and I are working on this new project, this Wander Awakening, which is a combination of voice with music, like we did with The Science of Peace, except that now it's the story of the Wanderer, which is your story, because if you've listened to us this far, and you probably are an ET soul, you probably are an angelic being who's just thirsting for this information. So what we've done is take that archetypal journey, put it into words with music, but then also build songs around each key step of the entire process, going from the original state of true enlightenment to the fall into materiality, to the journey through materiality, separation and pain, back into the awakening and the full realignment with Christ consciousness, for lack of a better term. So this is what has captured our interest right now, and the production value we're coming out with is amazing. I just want to thank you all for listening so much. It's been wonderful to have this opportunity to give you this message, and so many more people are listening now that I just really am grateful for the opportunity for my voice to be heard. I really don't see myself as anything special. I just see that I have something that I'm really passionate about, and I have a perspective that I like to share. And if it resonates with you, that's fine. And if not, I would never try to convince anybody that what I'm saying is true. I'm just sharing a philosophy and a perspective that to me makes sense, and that I've found some science that seems to back it up. So, Larry, anything you want to close us out with?
The only thing I would say is love your brother as yourself, because your brother is you.
I don't know. My brother and I still have some issues to work out.
Well, another F word. There
you go. His name is George W. And now the other guy is McCain. I have some problems with these guys, but I'm working on it.
Now, thank you very much. This has been enjoyable. I really appreciate it.
Great. It's been my pleasure, Larry, to introduce you to the audience, and I'm sure that we're going to get some positive feedback on this and maybe some negative feedback, but
I'm sure we will.
You know, whatever. You can love us, you can hate us, and that's all acceptable.
Yeah.
And we'll forgive you.
There you go.
All right, you guys have a good one. We'll see you next time.
Bye.